You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
.07 in the morning, you're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Christopher D. Simone, Matthew D. Neely, ESQ Esquire, and you. One more hour for this first week. We're on the first day of December. We are 14 days from our amazing Christmas party, White Stallion Ranch. Go to whitestallion.com, hit the gift shop, and do it up. So let's go right to the phones. We got U.S. Congressman Juan Sisgamani, CD6, on the line. Juan, good morning, sir.
Chris, buenos dias.
Buenos dias to you, my friend. Let's get right to it. According to reports, there's somewhere between one and tens of thousands of people crossing the border in the Tucson sector. Seems like every day now. What extra information does a congressman have that maybe the average Joe's not seeing out there? Because it looks pretty wild.
It is wild, and this continues to be the top issue for me up here, and then for many as well. Before I go into that, I just want to obviously comment on Senator Day O'Connor and her passing. A trailblazer, Arizona leader, and a great example for everyone out there. Definitely my three daughters that look up to her and her legacy, and my wife and our whole family, really. So just condolences to the family, and we're going to remember her properly, and history will be, you know, very, very kind to her legacy as well.
Rest in peace, Sandra.
Rest in peace. That's exactly right. So onto the border now. Chris, this keeps getting worse and worse, and that's exactly the point that we keep driving to the administration. You're looking now at up to 3,000 a day on some days. The street releases are up in the hundreds now a day, 400 to 500. They released over 20,000 or so. So we're looking now at a complete overrun of the situation. You have now ports of entry closing even more lanes, pulling CBP officers. You know, we have the ones on blue that sit in the ports of entry, the ones on green that are on the field. The officers in blue now, they're even being pulled from their duties to go on and attend on the processing side and transportation side of migrants. Now, remember, the majority of fentanyl crosses through the ports of entry. So what the CBP officers at the ports handle is not just the tourism and trade and commerce that is very important for the state, but it's also a high level of security, specifically on drugs that are quite frankly just pills, and they're a lot easier to transport into the U.S. than maybe other bigger loads of other types of drugs. So these are things that are happening. Ports checkpoints being closed because of the personnel being so pulled in so many directions. So this is a big problem. I continue to put pressure on this, and we've passed legislation that I'll be happy to talk about. But
sure.
The latest thing that I did, I wrote a letter to Mayorkas and urging him that, you know, highlighting all these issues and highlighting the attention that we need to deploy the National Guard to the border. He needs to deploy that. Once that happens, our officers can get the additional help they need right now. Listen, we need to hire more agents, but that's not going to happen fast enough to deal with the surge that is happening now. So we need the help of the National Guard for this. This has been done before. Even Obama did it in his time as well. So we are at a point that this needs to happen. Mayorkas and Biden need to issue that order so that the state of Arizona can deploy the National Guard to the border and add the needed help. So I sent this letter out yesterday, once these numbers hit another record high, and I'm waiting for a response.
He said he'll get back to you in February, so just be patient.
Yeah, well, listen, we're gonna keep on the pressure on him. He hasn't been to the border, not the Arizona border, in a long time. And the one time that he was there over in the Yuma sector, he straight up, just didn't follow up on anything that he said he was gonna do. I've sent him multiple letters. He's written back on some of them, in a slow response rate, specifically around the 85,000 kids that were lost in the system. This is a humanitarian issue, is way more, in so many other ways as well. People are drowning over in Texas, and they're suffering in the Arizona border as well. This is not the right way to do this, obviously, by any stretch of the imagination, and we need to keep up the pressure on them.
So I've been talking about it for the last 10 days here about this pulling of people off of the lanes in Nogales, right? So we know that wait times for people who need to come up and do business, whether it's trucks or tourists or shoppers, right, is now, I'm looking at the report from Green Valley News, up it's about a 1.5 hour wait now for drivers, up to 2 hours for pedestrians. I guess the Morley Gate is under renovation, so I don't know if that's reopened, but the reporting was that that's past its date. So if Morley Gate's closed, you're pulling everyone over off of the lanes, the chaos at the Nogales-Arizona border as we get through the Christmas season is just going to be insane.
And you're right. The timing couldn't be worse on that as well. You know how Southern Arizona depends on that traffic from Mexico and the shopping that happens in the season for this is where stores make up a lot of their lost revenue over the summer. This is where they make it up. Not to mention the trucks and commerce. This is bad for the environment, actually, for trucks to be sitting there idle for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And that discourages people from coming up. And these are, again, tourists, and these are people that have the right documentation to come in, visit, spend money, and have a good time in Arizona. And also what this does is that it just sends the message back to where a lot of these people are coming from, their countries of origin, that the message from the Biden administration continues to be the border is open and just come on over and you'll be allowed in and allowed to stay. That is the wrong message. And that's what this administration doesn't seem to comprehend. And then they say that they have control over the border. They do not. And we see the evidence of that every day. And even states that are like New York and Illinois that are seeing an influx of the migrants just making it there as a final destination. These are sanctuary cities, Democrat mayors that are saying that. And you don't have to go very far up north to see that Democrats are concerned about this as well. We've got mayors in Cochise County that are equally concerned as all of us are about this issue. This is not a red or blue issue. This is just an issue for the safety of our communities and for us to know who's coming into the country and to have order.
Real quick, 790-2040. Let's go to Eric. Eric's got a question about the border. Eric, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Congressman. So you've written a bunch of letters. You've written a bunch of letters that haven't gotten any response, so that's been completely ineffective. So what I want to know is, and you recited a bunch of facts about illegal immigration, which we already know, what specific legislation have you put on the docket up to this point? You've been in Congress well over a year. What specific legislation have you put on the docket for solving this problem, and what does that legislation that you put on the docket state?
That's a great question, Eric. Thanks for that. H.R. 2, and we did this much earlier in the year before the summer. H.R. 2 is the Secure the Border Act, stronger border security legislation. And this is the strongest that we've passed in actually congressional history here. I'll give you a couple of things that it does. It upgrades CBP's personnel and technology, adding more resources to the border. It also strengthens the protections for migrant children. This is a key thing I think that we should all be concerned about. The Biden administration has lost track of 85,000 unaccompanied kids at least. And this should be concerning for everyone, whatever side of the border you're on and whatever side of the aisle you're on as well. So that deals with that also. It also, and this is probably the most significant one that could have an impact immediately, which improves the asylum process. The problem right now is that the laws haven't changed. The implementation of the law by the Biden administration, or the lack thereof, has been the main source of the problem here. Of instead of declaring if the asylum seeker has a legitimate claim to stay in the country based on the asylum criteria, that usually would take 3 to 5 days, a week maybe, so you could hold on to have the asylum seeker in custody before a decision is made. So if that takes a week, then that's long enough, and then that can be determined. And if they don't have a legitimate claim, they can be sent back to their country of origin. That's not happening right now. So what HR 2 does, it limits the process in which that can happen, and it also increases the credibility fear, basically, that it enhances the criteria for someone to be able to claim asylum. Because right now you can just come in and people say, I'm seeking asylum, I don't want to go back to my country. And that's good enough. And then they're allowed to stay to get a court date in 2 years. So we need this is the main aspect, the asylum-seeking process.
Did H.R. 2 get out of the House, right?
Got out of the House. Yeah.
So it's hitting the thing that's called the U.S. Senate.
Yes. Yeah. Which again, this is the one of the main problems that we have overall in Congress. Whatever gets passed out of the House needs to go get passed in the Senate, and that Republicans don't have a majority there. And this is where a lot of these ideas and these actual bills that we pass through go and just sit there and die.
Where's Kelly and Sinema on HR2? Have they?
Well, I don't know exactly. They haven't had a chance to vote on this, but I visited the border with Sinema a couple of times, and she's been very much aligned with our concern and shares these thoughts as well. I know she's working on her side and getting something done. I don't know what the timeline there for the Senate is. And then, quite frankly, the whole speaker debacle that we had in the House just didn't really add a lot of pressure on that as well, as we were trying to figure out the next speaker. So all these things delay what the number one issue is right now, which is the border. The speaker earlier this week, we were in the meeting, and he said if we could get T-shirts made, the T-shirt would say border, border, border. This is what we need to be focusing on right now, especially as we, you know, go into supplemental funding for Israel and we look into the Ukraine situation and the border. This is the priority that we need to be looking at.
Eric, Eric, I know you had a follow-up, but I got to go quick because I got to go to break. So just go real quick.
So since you've been in Congress, nothing has actually happened to help this border situation. As we know, the numbers continue to increase. So really nothing has been accomplished. Is that really what your answer was?
My answer is that the House did its job, Eric. The House did its job. We passed this, and now it's up to the Senate to do this. We live in a country that has two chambers in Congress, and it needs to pass both and then sign by the president. That's the system that we have. I ran for the House, and we delivered on that, and now the Senate needs to do their job. And while they do that, we need to continue to find every avenue to do what we can to close the loopholes in the law that allow this to happen. And at the end of the day, the Biden administration has to enforce the law. We can pass all the laws, but if they decide to not enforce them, then we have a bigger problem here, and that's what's been happening.
Eric, I got to get going, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Juan, can you hold on for one quick break?
Sure.
All right, hold on. We're talking to U.S. Congressman Juan Ciscomani. 790-2040 is the phone number. John Densmore from the Doors' birthday today. Here we go. I got caught up playing the cowbell on that one. I apologize. 8:23 in the morning. Let's head back to our friend of the show, U.S. Congressman Juan Ciscomani. Juan, hello.
Hey, Chris. Hey, and I might have spoken too soon. I've got to get back to the floor in about 10 minutes for a vote series this morning. So I have a few more minutes here with you.
It's not a problem. Real quick, tell us about the freezing of the money for the Iranian regime.
Yeah, so this was essential. Now, the freezing of the funds happened. We took that vote a few weeks ago. What we did this week was to not allow any more funds on this at all. So, you know, Iran backed Hamas. They've waged unprovoked war and just, I mean, unspeakable terrors. We saw a video by the Israeli embassy here for members viewing. And I mean, what we've seen online is we got to see more details of what happened. And I mean, you can't unsee a lot of what we all witnessed. And it's unthinkable. So, you know, we got to do everything in our power to help Israel defeat Hamas and send a strong message that this is not going to be tolerated. So this freezes the $6 billion in Iranian funds that the Biden administration previously negotiated with Iran. So we just took that final step there to say no funds for Iranian Terrorism Act. That's what the act was called.
And one last thing. I can't believe we're talking about the Veterans Administration having issues with VA competence. What's going on there?
Well, that continues to be my focus as well. I'm in the Veteran Affairs Committee, and we're doing, I mean, this is, we had a hearing this week, continuing the pressure here. I heard from, you know, flying out of Tucson and out of Tucson, you sit with people on the plane that are leaving the town or coming back. And most people that do that are from Tucson, or they have links to Tucson. So it's great for me to just get that feedback from people that are traveling. I may not see them in a political event or something like that. So it's great to just sit with them. And sat next to a lady on the way up this week that she told me that she was getting a lot of her care. Her husband was getting most of his care out of the Phoenix VA because they were just concerned with wait times in the Southern Arizona one. You hate to hear that. And I've toured the Southern Arizona VA. A lot of people have had very pleasant experiences there and positive as well. So it's definitely a mixed bag, but a lot of improvements that we need to make. I've introduced bills on this as well that deal with the wait time that disability claims take for our veterans. Also preparing military members before they hit the workforce so they can be properly trained so they can go on to work immediately, adding more resources for mental health. These are the things that we've been focusing on for our veterans as well. I have a veterans council that helps me navigate through all this, and in that council we have some veterans that retired after 30-some years, general rank, and we've got some that served for 4 to 6 years, and they separated from the military, and the experiences are very diverse, and I want to make sure I get every perspective there. So the council has been very effective also.
All right, sir. Thanks for the update, and we'll talk to you soon. And there's other things to talk about, but I know you got to go. So have a good weekend, sir.
Yeah, we'll go this time. I mean, I'll be home tonight at midnight. I fly in, but then we're back here on Monday, so it's a short weekend. I hope to see some of you all around town, but we're back to work. We got to squeeze in as much as we can before the holidays. So I'll see you guys around town. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk soon.
All right. Later, Juan. U.S. Congressman Juan Ciscomani. Let's get this one real quick out. This is from Town Hall. It's from intern Katie. U of A student Katie Pavlich, Town Hall. Senate Democrats threw out the rules of the Senate Judiciary Committee on Thursday to launch an attack on the U.S. Supreme Court, more specifically on conservative justices and their friends. For months, Chairman Dick Durbin and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, both Democrats, have been trying to issue subpoenas to longtime conservative activists Leo Leonard and billionaire Harlan Crow. They're both private individuals who are friends with Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. Earlier this month, Durbin briefly backed his conquest to subpoena Leo and Crow. Today, he blatantly disregarded the Senate process and voted to do just that. Quote, the Senate Judiciary Committee Democrats have been destroying the Supreme Court now. Now they're destroying the Senate. I will not cooperate with this unlawful campaign of political retribution, Leo released in response to the move. So they're basically disregarding a host of Senate rules to force an illegal vote on subpoenas of private individuals. I like this line. Dick Durbin makes Joe McCarthy look moderate. Yikes. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice. Little Lou Rawls' birthday. Here we go. One thing that will be not mentioned by the mainstream media is Sandra Day O'Connor was appointed by a Republican named Ronald Reagan. It took a Republican to put a woman on the court, not the Democrats who say they're the only ones because they jump on, because they're the abortion party. That means they must be for women, unless you're an aborted woman. That's a whole other story. 790-2040, is she still there? Let's go to Elsa. Thanks for waiting for that long. I appreciate it. It's just the timing of things. So thanks for calling back.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's going on out there, young lady?
I called you last year about the drag show at the Fox. Well, it's that time of the year again. I have good news and I have bad news on that front.
Give me the bad news first.
All right. The bad news is that another institution is going to be hosting them this year. Can you guess who that might be?
Let's see. Is it an institution supported by taxpayer dollars? Let me ask for a hint.
Yes. And the good news is the Fox isn't doing it this year.
So it's, I mean, what do you mean they're not? You mean it's, but it's still at the Fox, is what you're saying?
Oh,
it's not at the Fox.
Fox is not hosting them. That's the good news. The bad news is there's another institution that is going to do the honors.
All right, so I'm thinking Pima County or TUSD.
It's the University of Arizona.
Yeah,
Centennial Hall.
They're killing it lately.
UA Presents has decided, you know, that after years of great entertainment, including the lovely Linda Ronstadt, She presented her concierge to mi padre there.
Yes.
Well, they're going to serve up some perversion and degradation. That's what they're into now. Last year, I encouraged your listeners to view the excerpts of the Murray and Peter production on YouTube.
Oh, boy.
But that was wrong. I should not have done that. No one should have those images stuck in their psyche. I mean, Chris, I would take my kid to a strip club before I would take them to this awful show. I mean, at least they would see something beautiful there.
Well,
okay, it's that awful.
So again, right? My thing with drag shows, right, is of course I would not want them to be supported by taxpayer dollars. So the question is U of A presents a U of A thing? I don't think they are. I think they're their own, even though they have the word in it. I don't know if it's owned by the U of A or they're a different organization.
If you go to their website, the University of Arizona,
right,
they are under there. They are listed in the, you know, the website.
All right, so we're looking at it. It looks like it's an 18 and over.
Yes,
that's
the show. Thing. I think that they got some pushback in Tennessee, in Texas, and in Florida because of the lewd and obscene content for minors. So they changed that up. That is a good thing.
Well, again, like I said, if adults want to go waste their time at a strip show, that was a Freudian drag show. go do it, right? I just don't want kids exposed
to
it.
I just don't think it upholds the legacy of Centennial Hall for great entertainment. I mean, they can do better.
Well, you're at the University of Arizona. They're kind of run by Marxist leftists. I don't know if you know this or not. So, and they also leftist Marxists that don't know how to can't find $240 million.
Yes. That's why I'm encouraging your listeners this year to call the U of A and tell them that this isn't the kind of fair that we want to see at this place. And, you know, they need all the patrons they can get. And if this is what they're going to be putting up, you know, they're going to be deeper in the hole.
Well, Elsa, thanks for bringing it to our attention, as always. And
keep
paying attention. That's what I keep trying to tell people. Pay attention.
Well, hopefully next year I don't have to call you because they won't be anywhere in Tucson. But
I'm sure they will.
Merry Christmas, Chris.
Merry Christmas, Elsa. Take care.
Bye.
790-2040 is the phone number. This is a quick local one. I just want to get out. This is a somebody's story. This is the people that live along First Avenue, or at least some of them, between River and Orange Grove, which people like to call that the zone of once I got out of Tucson, right? Like once you get past Culver's and you cross the street and you get past that, dangerous Walgreens. Once you get about 30 yards up, you're like, oh. Your risk of a vehicle going 100 miles an hour and flipping over goes down at least 40%. There's people who worried that talk about making. They want to light at Rudisill and First. So you guys, you know, I'm sure we have listeners in that area. I mean, I would. So people are like, oh, it's really hard making a left onto. I would never make that left on to First Avenue between River and Orange Grove. Especially the people going south are literally going 60 miles
and
an hour.
Downhill. Yeah.
Oh, it's like a mini foothills autobahn going down there. So anyway, there's a call for a intersection, a stop sign or light at maybe we'll do the Oral Valley roundabout that no one wanted on Moore and La Cañada, but you never know. Let's get to Newsom DeSantis. I watched bits and pieces. I didn't watch it. I watched a little bit this morning. So to me, I mean, DeSantis's two best zingas is when he was talking. He said he was talking to someone who wanted to that moved out of California, moved to Florida. And was telling Ron basically why, or telling someone that it's such a superior place to live than California. And as Gavin Newsom is smirking, Ron DeSantis mentions that the guy he was talking about was Gavin Newsom's father-in-law. So that was kind of a good one. And then he brought out the map. It's this map of, he whips out the map of San Francisco, and it had all of these small brown circles, and you could barely even recognize, you could even see the details of the map because of this, all these brown little circles that were all over it. And it was actually a printout of the actual city of San Francisco's poop map. And I'm like, oh boy. So the zinger that the Democrats that love Gavin Newsom, the only one they got to show me right now, is Newsom in the beginning said, neither of us will be the nominee for our party in 2024. That was his zinger on Ron DeSantis. And I see some of the right-wing news blogs and things like that putting that out there. And the part of that that's interesting, it's almost like they are celebrating the fact that, because they're so into Trump, like literally the guys at Gateway Pundit who think Donald Trump and Kerry Lake are just the second coming of the Lord, it says, Newsom just ended debate with Ron DeSantis before it even started. Quote, neither of us will be the nominee for our party in 24. Do you understand that Gavin Newsom wants Donald Trump as the head on the top of the ticket? Do you guys get that yet? The lefties in the Democrat Party are praying for Donald Trump on the top of the ticket. Arizona Democrats are really praying for a Trump Lake on the top of the ticket, because they know it'll just help Democrats down the line. Kerry Lake is an angry train wreck. And Donald Trump has so many negatives to him with the moderate and independents in this world. They fairly or unfairly, because that's the other thing. Oh, they're so unfair to the President Trump. You know something? Yes. A lot of times they are. But you know something? That's reality. And the perception is the reality when it comes to voting. One of our listeners, a very smart young man, sent me this email. We were talking about, I know you're on this, but I think we all need to be speaking clearly and loudly on the issue of divisiveness and candidates that like to... The issue of divisiveness and the candidates that like to divide. All the division will do is elect Biden and another incompetent Democrat president. The country is far past the point where we afford to call other Republicans' names while allowing the D's to stay in control. The wrong person at the top of the ticket could lose not only the presidency of the United States, but the House, Senate, and many state houses. When people come out to vote against someone, it appears from recent elections, they tend to vote against the party's candidate up and down the line. He says, how else can you explain Fetterman's election win in Pennsylvania? I'm telling you, Mark Napier is not the sheriff of Pima, because Donald Trump was at the top of the ticket and Pima County was looking to make anyone that had an R next to his or her name pay. And it's not like you'd ever heard Mark Napier go, I think Donald Trump's the greatest thing in the world. Didn't matter. As long as you have the R behind your name. And that is going to play out in 2024. And what I like about this email is the listener is mentioning there is responsibility on the candidates who divide. Because in the end, the Pyrrhic victory, the glorious losing of the Republican Party, and the idea that judges are going to make things better to fix our election boo-boos later, that's not the reality. And I don't know who's going to be the peacemaker out there in the Republican Party, but it's too easy for everyone just to yell at each other and just demonize each other. I'm not going to say it is, but for an example, there's people out there who, you know, say, well, Chris, you got to be part of that. And I said, I can be part of that discussion with unifying the Republican Party, but who else is invited? I've asked that question before. What other people need to become to have that discussion? Because there's others in the Republican Party that are amazingly divisive. They make me look. I just mention these things and go. And the other thing is, when I have Republican candidates that I have not, just from my interaction of them, I just find that they're low moral character. Everyone yells at me. They don't look at the person of the low moral character and go, maybe they got it. Maybe you should talk to them too. Figure out both sides of the story a little bit. So someone sent this to me. It was on some Republican page on Facebook. And so someone talks about a guy who's a very divisive militant Republican. And talks about him, and then the last two sentences, it's time to remove the filth from your ranks. Start with Chris DeSimone. This is your Pima County Republican Party big mouths out there. This is not someone who's on the XCOM or anything like that, but this is the attitude. So I find it cute when they go, oh, Chris, you should be, you know, and it's, you know, and Dave Smith's a nice guy. His wife literally hates my guts. And, so they're a little mixed on Chris, you know? So when we come back, I'll tell you about a text that, sent out to Democrats yesterday. And a few friends of mine who are Democrats who were on those lists sent me a screenshot of those, and you'll be interested to see what they said. So you're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. All right. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. The email, sorry, text message went out, a blast from the Democrat Party, local Democrat Party, looking for candidates to run for local office. So just want to make sure maybe we're doing something similar in the Republican Party instead of just G. Willikers gang and Rhino and whatever else we're doing. So, so this weekend, real quick, I don't know if my girl Mia does this anymore, but it's the 42nd annual Scandinavian Nordic Fair and Julemarked Christmas Market, which feels redundant. I think Julemarked means Christmas market. It's at 5360 East Pima. It starts, let's see, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And tomorrow, Streams of the Desert Lutheran Church. And the Grand Marshal of the Nordic Fair is Aaron Christensen. That sounds mildly Nordic. Look at her. Proud of her. Also, remember, this is a great weekend to knock out your Christmas shopping with Kay Bonita. Tankaverde and Sabino Canyon. Make it happen. Listener Robert was listening to Mark Van Buren talking about the... this is the same lady that also we hear complains about the music from St. Philip's Plaza. She is the Sonic Karen. Is what we're going to call her. Sonic Karen. Sounds like a Zappa album. Frank Zappa's new exploratory album, Sonic Karen. This is Robert. He lives up on the hill across the street from Rideau Park, up on the hill of River Road there. Heard Mark point out the County Board of Supes has stopped outdoor music at the tracks during racing season. Does that mean they're going to stop the rock concerts, bagpipes, and constant drumming by Native Americans during powwows, etc.? We've owned a home on the last little foothill ridge directly across the track since 1981. During 42 years, we've heard and watched U of A spring flings, multiple powwows, rock concerts. Why did they choose to shut down Mexican music for a couple of days, two days a week for 8 weeks is beyond me. Actually, the most annoying thing is the road noise from River Road. The climate terrorists may take care of that, preventing us from driving our gas and diesel vehicles. One of our pet peeves is people who buy homes in line with the airport runway and complain about the noise. I always love those, right? We bought a house on 29th and Swan, and what the hell's with all this, the airplane noise? Well, what year did you buy the house? 2009. When was Davis Monthan Air Force Base there? I'm going to take a guess, Matt. You can correct me. 1926? Does that sound reasonable?
Probably.
Right. So, or people who rent it. So, what Robert says is one of his pet peeves is people who buy run near an airport runway and complain about the noise, or people who rent or buy next to a multi-use park like Rialto and complain about the occasional music, or the people who buy homes on the east side of Tucson without easy interstate access, then complain and do their best to build a crosstown expressway across from my house. I know what you're saying, man. I mean, everyone wants to be the last person to move to their neighborhood, and there's, you know.
Got another call. Al said that over near Stone and Limberlost, they hear the music from Rialto, whether it's Spring Fling or at the races. They hear it.
Yep.
And deal with it and live with it, and it doesn't really bother them. They just hear it. But he did say they hear it, so.
And this is what happens, right?
And he said life goes on for them. They, yeah.
Let's go to KARE, Care News 11 in Minneapolis, another special town. This story from a while ago, but someone brought it to our attention here. Cup Foods and its affiliated businesses at 38th Street and Chicago Avenue filed a complaint against the city of Minneapolis requesting a $1.5 million in damages for causing the murder of George Floyd and then the subsequent management of what became the George Floyd Square. Menthol Tobacco and Southside Electronics are listed as the plaintiffs. Court documents say that all the businesses are owned by the same family. All the barriers erected at the intersection violated their property rights. The social unrest. Minneapolis started reopening the intersection in 2021. Then they decided to put barricades up. Many of the community members were upset with the decision to reopen it and voiced that they felt the city didn't consult them. Well, maybe it's like Katie Hobbs closing a. How do you close down the prison in Marana, and no one calls up Mayor Ed? And Mayor Ed plays ball.
That's the part that I don't get.
I mean, Katie knows who Mayor Ed is, right? Mayor Ed is amazingly active in the League of Cities and Towns, right? I'm sure they've seen each other and know each other very well. So the idea that she does not call up Ed Honey and Marana is bizarre. And well, actually it's not bizarre because Katie's pretty low class is the way I would describe it. So, all right, make sure you get your Christmas party tickets. This thing is 2 weeks away. WhiteStallion.com, hit the gift shop. You'll see a kind of a greenish square, which is our little invite. Look at Matt looking at the rain. Woo! Look at that rain. It's a hootenanner. And then Monday we have, of course, Dr. DeFilippo making her triumphant return. Our friends from Fellowship Square. We got a big St. Nicholas Day next week. We got Kazmar and Schweikert next Thursday. So it's a hoot and a holler. Working on Grover Norquist too. Probably have Grover on Monday too, is what I'm thinking. So another Grover Joanne double do. So, all right, let's go. You guys have an amazing weekend. Do your shopping at K Bonita and help Fatima celebrate her 14th anniversary, get lots of Papa Serenos and just hoist one towards the mountains and say, this one's for you, Chris and Matt. Everyone have an amazing weekend. Get those Christmas trees up if you haven't done it. Lazy. Let's go.